Blog Talk Radio.
You have reached the family of Airwaves America. Renaissance Radio presents the Dave and GC Rock Show. This is a show where we try to think for ourselves and offer thought-provoking, stimulating, informative, and entertaining discussion. Welcome.
And welcome, as the great G-Ski Rocks says, usually. Welcome to Renaissance Radio. It's the Dave and G-Ski Rock Show, as you just heard on the opening jingle. So this is Dave, and G-Ski has a gig tonight. So I'll be piloting this wild spacecraft myself. So if you're here, we got a chat room going, and if you want to call in, a couple things that you need to know. If you want to call in, it's 516-387-1705. Again, 516-387-1705. That's if you want to say something, it'll instruct you to push 1 on your keypad, and then I'll know that you've got something to say. If not, yeah, I figure you're just listening, and if you want to talk, push 1. That's the name of that tune. We got a great show for you. Anyways, we put it up a little late, but no biggie. We'll push ahead. If you want to get in touch with G-Ski Rocks, you can email him at gskirocks@airwavesamerica.com. G-S-K-I rocks, R-O-C-K-S, at airwavesamerica.com. If you want to get a hold of me, apparently, you can use the email address dave@airwavesamerica.com. Full disclosure, I have yet to access that email, so it's probably not the best way to get in touch with me. you can try Twitter, you can get in touch with G-Ski and he'll text me. Beyond that, I'm hiding. So, like I said, I got a pretty decent idea of a show today, and we're going to talk about a bunch of things. We'll talk about anything anybody wants to call in and talk about, and then we'll take it from there. You know how it goes. If somebody calls in and wants to chat about something or debate something, we'll take them. If not, we'll proceed with our regularly scheduled programming, which whatever that is. I've been kind of like following the Arizona recount, not the recount, the Arizona forensic audit. It's not really a recount; it's a forensic audit. And it's wide open. It's live stream. They've got, a bunch of armed guards. And I pick up little things here and there on like on TikTok or something, just talking about it. And it is, I don't know what I'm missing what I'm getting at is what I see is so cut and dry. Except it's not in the news. It's not a big thing. There's nothing to see here. All the courts and all the judges have said, we're not taking voter fraud things. The corruption must be really, really, really deep. I don't know how else to put it. It's the highest offices in this country support that support the quote, I use air quotes, the narrative says the election wasn't stolen. And I've told G-Ski this many, many, many times. There's no way I can believe that with all of the momentum and all of the excitement and all of the support that you would look across this country and see for Trump, that who generated 75 plus million votes, that's the most votes of a sitting president in history, apparently that's what they say, but Biden generated 80 million, conveniently. So what they're looking at now is the I've got a couple of links I can throw up in the chat room if anybody's going to be joining us. That not only are they're finding votes, they're holding it up against like UV lights and stuff. If a mail-in ballot was mailed in, it should have two folds in it, you know, for like a trifold envelope. And, they're finding zero creases in these ballots. There's no creases in them, in thousands of them. I'm not sure of the numbers. I got some TikToks that, that we can take a look at that kind of briefly describe, what's going on down there in, Maricopa County, and the latest thing that I discovered was the Maricopa County officials, apparently they forgot the password to those Dominion voting machines. All right, so let me just take care of this. What's up, Bigfoot? There you go. All right. Well, welcome to the show. Wouldn't mind if you called. Might give me a break. As you can see, I'm going to be flying this solo tonight. I got some other things that I'm going to talk about. Actually, I'm going to be talking about after I finish hitting this the Maricopa County thing. I found an essay that I wrote about three or four years ago, about natural law. And I'm just looking it back over and, I'm saying, damn, I'm smart. You know? So we'll get to that. But what I was saying is that for some reason they don't have the passwords to those Dominion voting machines. Meaning, when they did their recount, they didn't have access to those Dominion voting machines to do recounts. I saw a quick little TikTok about this, and took a video of like a stack of $100 bills. And they're saying that if you count all these bills, it will equal it'll equal $10,000. Okay, that's fine. What Arizona is doing is they're looking at the ballots, and when they spread out that stack of hundreds, like there was a whole bunch of like Monopoly hundreds in there. So they're looking at the bills. So as an example of what Maricopa County is doing as far as the forensic audit. They're looking at the ballots, and there was one guy, and I'll play it in a minute. He was talking about the odds of even 100 ballots in a row for one person. Those odds are astronomical, but they were talking about getting 1,000 ballots in a row, which is the odds are in the quadrillions to one. So, according to him. I didn't do the math. I'm not really good at math. So that's what's up with that. I'm trying to follow it. I'm trying to be real about it. you know, I still have friends that are you know, talking about, you know, well, why do you suppose the fences around the Capitol? You know, why do you suppose it's to keep them in? And I was like, I mean, don't they go home at night? I mean, how are you keeping them in if they go home at night? And then what? They show back up inside the cage that you're retaining them in. Didn't make sense to me because they were saying that this is all a military operation and Trump's still the president. You know, you know, it's really, he's really not. I mean, you know, in some far, far technicality, fine. But they really bend over, they twist themselves into pretzels to make it the truth. And I'm not buying into all that stuff. I just have to be careful what I emotionally invest in, because I hate to lose. You know what I mean? I hate to be wrong. You know, but all the whole time, oh, it's going down, or they're going to be arrested, and then, you know, I had somebody asking me about, well, have you seen Mueller lately? No, but that doesn't mean he's arrested. Or have you seen, you know? I forget who he rattled off two or three other names, and they were, you know, the big names. I didn't keep up with them. Just because we haven't seen them doesn't mean that they're arrested or otherwise. You know, something was supposed to be happening with Hillary on a certain date. I really don't think anything did. So, you know, these rabbit holes really go deep, and I don't go into them anymore. I barely even look at them. But you know, what I'm trying to do is talk these people back out of the hole, because it's going down. And I would say, okay, so let's say they got the evidence, they got everything that they need. Who's going to prosecute it? Because there isn't a high level prosecutor that would prosecute it. Okay, there's not a high-level judge that would even hear the case, you know, as far as, you know, all the corruption that's going on. I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know how it's going to do it. I don't know where to go to, you know, to get the justice that we need to get from these crooks or from these corrupt bureaucrats / politicians. I don't know where to extract the justice, because there's nobody willing to do it. And you know, that's kind of when they stop talking about it. They don't. Or at least stop talking to me about it. Put it that way. So you know, there's a lot that is going on in there. I was listening to some Dan Bongino either today or the other day, where he was talking about now they're rekindling this whole Russia thing, so that they have access to discrediting Rudy Giuliani and John Solomon. Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt that a bit. Those are the guys that uncovered most of this stuff. John Solomon was the investigator. Giuliani was like the attorney who has the credibility. Well, they're trying to put them under investigation. And Bongino argues that Solomon is the real target, but Giuliani is the one who's more visible. Everybody knows who Giuliani is, in other words. So, you know, it's one of those things that they're starting to rekindle, or not rekindle, but just rehash some of these things that, you know, we've been around, we've been through the whole thing once. And I'm not going to deny that there's a swath of people that still believe Trump colluded with Russia to steal the election. There's a ton of people that believe that. Regardless that it's been proved or disproved and debunked and all that. Six ways to Sunday, even in the Mueller report. You know, I got a guy that says, well, they didn't say the Mueller report. They didn't absolve him of it. They didn't acquit him of colluding, or they didn't prove he didn't. Excuse me. That's not the standard. That is not the standard. And believe me, you don't want that standard, because if you have it for one person, then you have to have it. Then you'll have it for everybody, because then precedent will have been set. Well, if you can get away with doing it to this person, well, you can do it to pretty much anybody that you want. Well, there's in the Constitution, there's a thing that you can't do ex post facto law. You know, you can't pay for crimes that your father committed, for example, for another thing. And you can't be you can't have laws made against you personally. It's for everybody. It's not, you know, it's I'm trying to think of the clause. It might be Section 8. It might be in Section 8 that in Article 1, Section 8. I don't have it in front of me. I could look it up. But it's, you know, along with the Congress can't make ex post facto law, which means you can't make something illegal and then go and arrest people that were engaged in that activity before it was illegal. So that's the ex post facto aspect of it. But again, like I said, you also can't have legislation targeting a person, which is kind of what they're trying to do. You know, if they could, they would, or if they could figure out a way to do it, they would, against Trump. And they would legislate against Trump. They've already tried to impeach him twice, and even once as a citizen. I don't get it. They are so frightened of him. And speaking of that, brings me full circle back to the Maricopa County forensic audit. They couldn't get anywhere with lawsuits. They couldn't get anywhere with intimidation. The Democrats, I'm talking about, to stop this thing or pause it or interrupt it or disrupt it or whatever. Now they're going to Biden's Justice Department to say what's going on down there is a civil rights violation. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, you got to twist yourself up in like a pretzel to get that. I don't see that at all. But okay. I don't think it's going to affect anything. But again, we're in a situation right now. You know, it's like, number one, nothing will surprise me at this point. And number two, they will do whatever it takes. They don't have to follow the law. They have shown that. Even at the highest level, the media doesn't call them out for it. And that's really the only entity that is in a position to guide public opinion with regards to what's legal, what's not legal, or what's right and what's not right. You have the media. Oh, my goodness. The media, really? That's determining that? That's horrible. That's awesome. So we have the media, the gaslight media. That's what I determined to call them from henceforth, gaslight media. I've got, let me see here, threatened hearing security, that release, threatening to release security information, county auditors. So most of the TikToks about this topic are like clips from One America Network, OAN, whatever those letters actually stand for. I don't have it, but you know, it seems like that's what Fox, OAN is what they thought Fox was. Fox really isn't a right wing or even a, you know, a constitutional type of thing. I have a couple people on there, of course. I mean, I don't watch it, but you know, that's the nature of that. I just OAN seems to be kind of like the Epoch Times. You know, those guys aren't afraid to print what they're doing. They're not afraid to go on air with what they've got. And you know, it seems very credible to me, because it comports with a lot of other things I'm seeing from other sources, other aspects, articles, all kinds of different articles. They are deathly afraid of that audit, because that's going to be a domino. That's going to be, you know, bing, 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 bing. Matter of fact, up here in Windham, New Hampshire, there is another audit of some kind going on. The governor doesn't support it, because he says, "Oh no, you know, New Hampshire has had the most integrity in their election," so he's against it. I don't know what to think about this guy. Sununu is the governor, Chris Sununu. His dad was a governor, John Sununu. His dad was an advisor, a top advisor, maybe chief of staff or something, to George W. Bush, the first, you know, George the Daddy. And there's a deep political crease going through that family. And now he's been the governor. He'll probably run for senator. It'll probably be better than any of the two senators that we have right now. Maggie Hassan, I don't even know the other one. It doesn't even matter. Two Democrats. So, but anyways, so Chris Sununu, the governor here of New Hampshire, he's a Republican. Okay, so you can't even really say he has that going for him, because it's. Doesn't really mean much anymore, if you're a rhino, and if you're a governor that didn't uphold the ban on critical race theory in the classrooms, then you know, not my favorite thing. Critical race theory. So it's okay to teach it, I guess. So I'm just trying to see if there's anything more bits I can extract from this topic. If you think of anything and you want to pop it in, you know, go ahead and let me know. That's fine. You can give us a call. Where are we? 516-387-1705. You can give a call. And then, you know, remind me of something I forgot, please. So anyways, yeah, we're going to be cruising along. I'm going to be taking a break here in another minute or so, and then we'll be back. And then I'll get into this natural law thing. I hope you like it. Like I said, it's a little essay that I wrote a while ago. So with that, this is Dave Graham in for G Ski Rocks, in for myself and G Ski Rocks. He's like I said, he's got a gig, and I'll be back in a couple.
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and G Ski Rocks.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
No one knows how to best cope with kidney disease like someone who lives with it every day. And that's why the National Kidney Foundation created NKS Peers, our peer mentoring program for kidney patients, including people on dialysis, transplant recipients, and those in earlier stages of kidney disease. Our program also connects living kidney donors with people who are considering donation. NKF trains kidney patients and living donors to serve as mentors in the program, and then we connect them with others who are seeking support. For someone who is just diagnosed with kidney disease or someone considering donating a kidney, talking it through with someone who's been through it is invaluable. Participants use a special toll-free phone system to connect to each other, so no one has to disclose their personal phone numbers or incur any long-distance charges, and the program is completely free. It provides effective, confidential help to those who need it. To learn more or to get involved, call 855-653-7337, that's 855-NKF-PEER, or email us at nkfpeers@kidney.org.
I am Conor McGregor, multiple weight MMA champion. I'm a fighter and I've been through many battles in the octagon. Many consider my fights in the octagon heroic, but the real life heroes are those men and women who fight to protect us every day. The real life fighters, the real life heroes, are the firefighters and police officers. These first responders are true heroes, because these brave men and women put themselves in the line of danger every single day protecting us all. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation ensures that first responders from fire, EMS and police departments who are killed in the line of duty with young children have a home without the burden of a mortgage. They are my heroes. They need our help today. I'd like to ask you to join me in donating $11 a month to support their efforts. Your $11 a month honors and supports our first responders. Please call now at 1-844-BRAVEST or visit tunneltotowers.org.
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and GC Rock.
Oh, well, welcome back. Dave Graham here with you. And for GC, he's got a gig tonight, so we're gonna push on without him. Last week I had this song that I tried to play, and the playing it from my phone, and the phone timed out, and then it cut off, and I tried to get it going again, and everything like that. It was called "Are We There Yet?" And it's a mixture of all like Democrat speeches of, you know, how everything that they, all the utopia that they're presenting to buy votes is just around the corner. If you just vote for me, 10 short years will be this, you know, just around the corner, just in 5 years, it'll be this. Well, I've since uploaded it, and I thought we might take a listen to that before I get into the nature thing. So here we go. It's called "Are We There Yet?"
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
We can create a million new manufacturing jobs in the next 4 years. If you believe in a country where everyone gets a fair shot and everyone does their fair share and everyone plays by the same rules. Yes, our road is longer, but we travel it together.
Imagine the breakthroughs that are on the horizon. And just beyond.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
America, I never said this journey would be easy. And right now.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Yes, our path is harder, but it leads to a better place.
Mama, are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
Not yet.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
Are we there
yet?
Tell me,
mama, are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
It's literally around the corner.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Imagine a world in which hunger is vanquished by crops that don't depend on the soil, water, or fertilizer, or pesticides to thrive.
Are we there yet?
They're just around the corner.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Imagine a world in which nations no longer depend on nuclear weapons for their defense.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Yeah, so there's your utopia. It's always just around the corner. It's always 5 years off, 10 years off. So anyway, let me dig into this here. This was a I started touching on it a little bit last week, and it was talk. I was talking about natural law, and I'm gonna kind of go through this as best I can. I may not read it word for word, but you know, to get the essence of it, to get the nature of it, if you will. Nature is a topic that is seldom spoken, and research on the topic, you kind of have to seek out for yourself. In Congress today, you will not see a bill or a law less than 1,000 pages, you know. The point about that is it at least can be read and studied. You know, you can, it's a tangible thing. Whether or not it makes sense is another story. So where do you look up natural law? You don't really have a place to look up natural law. So, first of all, it means, the laws of nature and nature's God. If you take that, page is shifting here. If you take that from the Declaration of Independence, everybody knows that phrase. You know, the laws of nature and nature's God. The state of nature. You can analyze the nature of a being or a thing. The word nature comes from a Latin word meaning birth. The nature of a being or thing is found in the essence of what that being or thing is made or created or meant to do. So where can we look these things up? You can find grains of it sprinkled throughout the writings of the ancient philosophers like Cicero, Socrates, Aristotle, but also in the 18th and 19th centuries with political and philosophical writings from John Locke, de Montesquieu, Frederick Bastiat, even some of our own founding fathers, and more often than not, the founding fathers would reference the ancient philosophers, which means the ancient philosophers truly discovered some eternal truths and enduring truths in the subject of the nature of mankind. So you can easily apply natural law to outside of mankind, like the sky is blue and water is wet. But to deny the actual truths discovered by the ancients is to really live in denial. So the other way to do this, you can just think very deeply on the topic. And together, you know, with the references that I mentioned earlier, you start to come to like a vague understanding of natural law. Nature is a higher law, like gravity or mathematics. So in other words, any legislation from man to be good legislation must comport with or at least not contradict the higher law of nature. So I'll give you an example. Man could legislate that people must fly instead of walking, or they might legislate 2 plus 2 equals 5 henceforth. Well, this would not be good legislation because the respective higher laws prevent even the possibility of compliance. These are, I mean, obviously these are absurd examples. But it's to make the point that I found in Frederick Bastiat's book, The Law. No society can exist unless the laws are respected to a certain degree. But the safest way to make them respected is to make them respectable. So the consequences of violating natural law, I mean, is not always so apparent, immediate, or enforceable. But the argument is there and obvious once illustrated. So if we start with a frame of reference, and this comes from Dr. Larry Arnd, who is the president of Hillsdale College. I took a couple of their Constitution 101 courses, and this I found very poignant. The nature of a being or a thing is obvious in comparison with things of a different nature. Once a distinction is made by comparing things of a different nature, things that share a nature can be said to be equal. Quoting the Declaration of Independence, quote, all men are created equal, unquote. We can change the word men to anything else, like horses. All horses are created equal. All hogs are created. All dogs are created equal. All trees are created equal. All angels are created equal. On and on and on and on. When you strip out everything but the nature of a being or a thing, that is the respect with which it is equal to all other things sharing that same nature. I have some excerpts from the Abraham Lincoln when he was debating Judge Douglas. He had a couple of really, really strong points about he's talking about Judge Douglas was saying that, listen, we're creating new territories, and if they want to bring slavery, they should bring slavery. If most of them want to bring slavery, you know, they own the slaves, you know, blah, blah, blah. They can bring them in. So it says, this is Lincoln, Judge Douglas declares that if any community wants slavery, they have a right to have it. He can say that logically if he says that there is no wrong in slavery. But if you admit that there is a wrong in it, he cannot logically say that anybody has a right to do wrong. He insists that, he's talking about Judge Douglas, upon the score of equality, the owners of slaves and the owner of property of horses and every other sort of property should be alike and hold them alike in a new territory. That is perfectly logical if the two species of property are alike and are equally founded in right. So in other words, you can take horses and hogs as property into the new territory and you'll be fine, but slaves are not in the same category as horses and hogs. There's a few, he goes back to it. He says, if you admit that one of them is wrong, you cannot institute any equality between right and wrong. He says, he goes on, I'm trying to get my page to go. He says, again, in the sixth debate, apparently they had a bunch, includes this on the topic. He says, when Judge Douglas says that whoever or whatever community wants slaves, they have a right to have them. He is perfectly logical if there is nothing wrong in the institution. But if you admit that it is wrong, he cannot logically say that anybody has a right to do wrong. So he's repeating himself on that. When he says that slave property and horse and hog property are alike, to be allowed to go into the territories upon the principles of equality, he is reasoning truly if there is no difference between them as property. But if one is property held rightfully and the other is wrong, then there is no equality between the right and the wrong. So that, turn it any way you can, in all the arguments sustaining the Democratic policy, and in that policy itself, there is a careful, studied exclusion of the area that there is anything wrong in slavery. Let us understand this. I am not just here trying to prove that we are right and they are wrong. I have been stating where we and they stand and trying to show that there is a real difference between us. And I now say that whenever we can get the question distinctly stated, can get all these men who believe that slavery is in some of these respects wrong to stand and act with us in treating it as a wrong, then, and not till then, I think we will in some way come to an end of this slavery agitation. So he's saying that if you can see the difference between horses and hogs as property, then they cannot be compared to people as property. There is a distinction between the nature of the beings. Property ownership is a principle which must comport with the higher law, the higher natural law. I did this last week with G Ski, where I said, you know, if we were in Kabuki Theater, which is just a shadow on a screen, we stand behind it, we're backlit. If G Ski and I stood next to each other, there'd be two guys. But if you walk up a hog or a horse, it would be two guys standing next to a hog and a horse. In other words, you can't help but know that there is a difference between the horse and the two guys. I mean, if you take the screen up, you'll see that I'm a lily white guy and he's a hot chocolate black guy, you know, which really doesn't matter when you take away. When you put it as a silhouette, that doesn't matter. It's two dudes, two guys. The horse, that's what's different here. So let me see here. You can't help but know. Add this to where the states in the South almost unanimously voted to make the importation of new slaves an act of piracy, which carried the death penalty. But no such restriction was placed on the importation of horses, and et cetera. So that's kind of an interesting point. In other words, that's how you know that they knew when they voted piracy to be the importation of slaves to be piracy, punishable by death, but not for horses or hogs and that sort of thing. That's how you know they knew that the nature of those properties, you know, put it in air quotes, the properties, was not equal. So you can't extend people as property, especially if you declare as a society that the importation of human slaves is an act of piracy punishable by death, but you can bring in all the horses and hogs that you want. That is the distinction right there. So how else can you ascertain natural law? You can do it a different way. You can do it with a hierarchy. You have a rock, you have a tree, you have a dog, you have a man. What comes next? Right? Because man is not perfect. There's got to be something beyond that. So a rock, a pebble, a boulder, or even sand, they all share the same nature. Sand is the binding factor there, and because when you crush a pebble, a rock, or a boulder, you get sand. All right, so what about a tree? Like I said, it's a living thing, but it's not a sentient thing. You can look at a tiny acorn and then look at an oak tree. They share the same nature in that the acorn grows into an oak tree, and the oak tree then produces acorns. But they appear very, very different when observed. So now we'll move up to dogs. All animals can distinguish their own species instinctually. Dogs, for instance, make puppies, which in turn grows into dogs. Well, there's nature for you, right? But that's pretty obvious. Dogs have emotions, right? You can scold a dog and he'll put a tail between his legs and, you know what I mean? So there's another, it's a little bit higher level than, you know, the last example I had was trees. They're a living thing, right? They grow and they procreate, right? The acorns will grow a new tree, that type of thing. And dogs, like I said, they're a little bit higher because they can speak English or whatever you want to teach them. They can be taught. They can express emotions. They can have, they can learn different things, and you can train them. They're interactive, a whole lot more interactive than a tree. I guess technically you can interact with a tree, but it takes decades. You want a tree to grow a certain way, you get something to cause it to grow, to turn a corner or something like that. But again, it takes decades. So then you have dogs. Okay, so then you have mankind. That's where the fun begins. For what purpose has mankind been placed on the earth? What purpose has mankind been placed on earth at our current station? So we return to the rock, tree, dog, man ascent. We, as humans, we can look at a rock and we can see it contains no life of its own. It possesses virtually no faculties. We can look at a tree. We can recognize something living, although possessing, like a rock, no faculties of its own. Then we look at a dog. We can see life and faculties in the form of instincts and even the social structure with the pack, with hierarchy and coordination of tactics during a hunt, for example. Like I said, you can train them. But mankind is the only animal with a reasoning faculty. We have instincts to varying degrees, but we're also capable of argument or reason. Since by observing nature, we can find these faculties not recognizable, at least in no other animals, but we're forced until such time as we can recognize them to assume mankind is the highest of the earthly hierarchy, unless they're Democrats. All right, just kidding, just kidding. But here we go. Mankind knows if there is a group of beings in peril, they save the humans first. Even above the regrettable loss of a loved animal, or if it's only humans, you save the babies first. These instincts are divine gifts. Also, mankind will protect and love their own families before others. So if not a hierarchy within mankind itself, at least a hierarchy of priorities. And why do we do this? We don't really... The only reason you can come up with is that it's a divine gift. That supplies the fuel or the drive that we require to affect our own self-preservation and that of the things that we love. However, is mankind perfect? Ooh, there it is. There it is, right? Because everybody knows nobody's perfect, right? That's the thing. Nobody's perfect. We don't know. Nobody's perfect. So, who is perfect? Who or what would be above mankind in the hierarchy? In other words, if mankind is not perfect, then there's room for a next level. We can agree on that, right? Well, who or what represents this perfection? You all know it. It is God, or at least angels, divinity. So, what is man's nature? We have compared mankind with the things below, and now we have compared him with the things above. Mankind seems to be upper middle of the higher overall hierarchy. So, if given these comparisons and hierarchy, are we not meant to aspire for the more divine life? Knowing, of course, man is flawed and perfection is not for or of this earth. Should mankind not strive towards perfection within ourselves? Unfortunately, many of us are reduced to the easy road of seeking perfection in others. So that's the name of that tune. That's my essay. That's my dissertation. That's my writings on natural law. It was really cool. If you get a chance, do the Hillsdale College. They're free classes. It's a video, but you can also convert it to audio and just listen to it. That's kind of what I used to do. I used to take them when I was working late at night. I would download the video, have it converted, and I would take it, you know, two or three courses and just listen to them, you know, over 8 hours. You know, among other things I was listening to. So anyways, let me know what you think of that. I thought it was pretty poignant. G-Ski said I'm way ahead of the curve. I think I've been ahead of the curve on a couple of things. I was ahead of the curve when I wrote in my first book about, second book. I wrote about the critical theory. It was something that I stumbled on. But look at what's going on now. I stumbled on it like five, six, 7 years ago. Stumbled on it, studied it, wrote about it, you know, found out the origins of it. Did a show on it, on critical theory, a few weeks ago, maybe about a month ago by now. But that was one of the things that that G-Ski and I we discussed. And I gotta say, I miss having him here to discuss things. It's kind of one sided right now, and just trying to come up with time to sneak off and take a sip of water or something. Anyways, anybody got anything? You can give a call. Here we go at 516-387-1705. One of the other things I was ahead on was the gaslighting show we did last week or the week before on gaslighting, and I'm starting to hear other people talk about gaslighting and the gaslight me. So I kind of got ahead on that because it's what made sense when I realized what it was. That's what made sense. So anyways, yeah. So we're gonna take another break, and we're gonna go. I'm gonna play some songs. When I get back, though, I got this other song that I used to have. When we did the show before, we had all kinds of like we talked about all kinds of promos, and one of the songs that I wrote, it was I redid the words from a Weird Al Yankovic song. His song was One More Minute, and I redid it a cappella, and I mixed in some of Jeff Dunham's Ahmed, and it was kind of a funny little song. We'll play that when I get back, and then you guys can hear that. Kind of a fun little thing. So. We'll be back with the top of the hour, and we'll kick it back off.
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and GC Rock.
My daddy was a hero, and I'm so proud of him. I love him, and I miss him very much.
I made you, Dad. I love you, Daddy.
Very sad and hurtful that my sisters won't have as much as memory like I do with my dad.
When I told the girls that their daddy became an angel, it was extremely hard because their daddy was no longer there to tuck them in at night, to be with them every day.
There are over 1,000 families that need our help. Hamilton Towers is honoring those heroes that risked their lives by providing them with mortgage-free homes.
The moment I stepped in my home, I was in awe, knowing that this was the most beautiful home I'd ever stepped into.
I love this house because it helps me and my mommy and my baby sisters and all my other family to realize that other people are there with us and supporting us.
I'm Frank Silla, chairman of the Stephen Silla Tunnel to Towers Foundation. This is our contract with our first responders and military, that when you go and serve your country or your community and you give your kids a kiss goodbye, and you don't come home or you're catastrophically injured, we're going to give them a mortgage-free home.
It means so much to me as a law enforcement officer who was affected by a tragic incident with the loss of my husband to know that if there is a loss in the future, the Tunnel to Towers will provide support for those families. They're not alone. I lost the father to my children. And for $11 a month, you can make families like mine more whole.
I'd like to ask you to contribute $11 a month to support their efforts. Please visit tunneltotowers.org.
They asked for $11 a month because it kind of represents the Twin Towers before they fell. That's kind of like the little icon that they have. So here we go with the Kidney Foundation.
No one knows how to best cope with kidney disease.
I love life. I love life because there's a challenge and something new every day. I was told when I was getting married that I had this kidney disease. And my three sisters had it, and two of my brothers had it as well. It slows the kidneys down till they stop working. I tell myself that this can be rough and hard, but you can live, and you can be happy. I go to dialysis three times a week. I spend 4 hours in the center. It's good to go to dialysis and see somebody care about you. I'm a social worker by profession. I like being around people. It is important to listen to your technicians and your doctors, your nephrologists and dietitians. If you don't talk to them, they don't know you're feeling bad or feeling sick. By working together, you'll feel better. I got my husband. I got my family. I got my job. I visit different places doing health and wellness like hospitals, dialysis centers, clinics, and do workshops concerning prevention for kidney failure. Dialysis affects people in different ways. Find out how it affects you so you can be able to beat it to the punch, so you'll be able to be active and do things that you want to do. Be educated about what's going on with you and your body. I try to enjoy life more than what I have before. I have kidney failure, and I'm living.
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and GC Rock.
Oh, welcome back. Welcome back. Here we go. We're going to kick off another hour. Well, hey, we got a great show for you. And we're going to kick in another hour of something. I promised the Bacon Zone song. And I'm kind of excited to get that going on. It's about, let's say, it was written during the Obama administration. And for some reason, during the Obama administration, Muslims slash mostly terrorists were like prominent in the news, or in our circles, we talked about it. I remember listening to Usama Dakdok, who is he's a Christian, but he has translated the Quran because he speaks Arabic, and he translates. So, anyways, we got a lot of information about him, and a lot about I know a lot of us would show up at his show and listen. So that kind of lent to me writing this song called The Bacon Zone, because G-Ski used to always call his 2020 radio show, "You're in the Bacon Zone." We may adopt that for the Renaissance Radio. You're in the Bacon Zone of Renaissance Radio. We'll see. We'll see how it rolls off the tongue. We got to be cool and catchy about this, but we'll see. But anyway, without further ado,
you see what I'm trying to say, Abdul? I'd rather you got over yourself, put an end to all this righteous indignation, have some bacon and enjoy it, we can all get along, and from war enjoy permanent vacation. Macaroni and cheese. I'd rather replace all
Who's there?
Me. I kill you.
Oh, yeah, baby. Been a while for that one. Anyways, that's got a lot of views on YouTube. You can look at find my channel. So I have a few things there. Anyways, so welcome back, Dave Graham, with Dave Graham and G-Ski Rock Show. G-Ski's off for tonight. I'm piloting the spacecraft. Speaking of spacecraft, there's a whole bunch of UFO stuff that's like creeping into mainstream stuff. What's up with that? I don't know, and I have no idea. So I really don't know where to take that one. I'm wondering if Suzette is out there, Bigfoot's wife. Maybe she can give us a call. Let us know how California's going. We'll see if she wants to call in. That'd be good. Or Bigfoot, he can call in. He likes to sit in the background, but he's the one that's here. We got Sue from New Mexico. I'm pretty sure that's Sue, 505 area code. So we'll if she pops on, if she wants to chime in, that would be very welcome. Until then, I'm gonna go and do and show you why G-Ski said I was ahead of the curve with a couple of things. In chapter 2 of the book, Reality is Not Optional. That's my second book. It talks about doctrinal communism and why it words things the way it does, where it started. I've got a lot of the origins of these type of things. By the way, Mark Levin just put out a book, and it's not out yet, but you can pre-order. It's called American Marxism, and he's trying to get as many people as he can to do pre-orders so that they can't mess with his numbers and say that he doesn't mean anything. So, anyways, he was talking about it today, and he's talking about in his book. He has 9 books out, you know, a number of them were New York Times bestsellers. But he's talking about the origins of critical theory, and I'm following along with it in my head because I'm saying, I wrote about this, you know, 6 years ago. Now, don't get me wrong, I am not putting myself on the plane with Mark Levin. That guy is miles ahead of me in many, many ways. On this particular topic, I brought it out a little sooner than he did. So, it was all the same thing. I was like, "Yep, yep, yeah, got this." You know, he mentioned the Frankfurt School in the one I was listening to today. When I listen to the podcast, it's always a couple of days behind, and then I catch up with it usually on Saturday. So tomorrow I'll be catching up with, you know, a couple of Mark Levin shows. So we'll see what he says, you know, about this. But some of the names that he was mentioning were names that are in my book. One of the things that he talked about, like I said, was the Frankfurt School. Felix Weil was a young Marxist who wrote his PhD on the practical problems of implementing socialism. And he was published by Karl Korst in 1922. Weil gathered the greatest thinkers within the communist movement and organized a week-long event, or a symposium, if you will, featuring attendants like George Lukacs and Karl Korst and Karl August Wittfogel, I can't even say it, and Frederick Pollock. And then these were all at the symposium. Weil, he took the lead and worked it out with the Ministry of Education for the director of this newly hatched idea for an institute. he would be a professor right out of the state system. This way, the institute could boast university status. Wheel funded these efforts from his father's grain business, setting up salaries and buildings for a permanent institute. Felix Wheel was an orthodox Marxist, which means he looked at Marxism as methodical and controlled, like a grand experiment. And what better place to research and test experiments than your very own university? I'm talking about the Frankfurt School. His research was social and historical, focused mainly on the workers' movement. George Lukács repudiated his writings under pressure from the Communist International, or the Comintern Congress. Published in 1923, History and Class Consciousness was perhaps one of the major inspirations for the Frankfurt School. And Lukács denouncing of it illustrated that the Institute must operate independently from the Communist Party if the research and findings was to be genuine. So what they did, it was a communist school, and they were studying Marxism and communism. But in order for their research to gain any credibility, they had to have a high-level communist denounce it. That way... That way, it would be the research and findings were genuine, independent of the Comintern Congress, the Communist International Congress. That's pretty amazing. To be that diabolical, to say, you know, if you guys are with us, nobody's going to believe me. They'll just say it's communism, and it, you know, they'll poo-poo it. Well, we'll get you to denounce us. Then we'll find all the same stuff that we all both believe, and it will be genuine research. Anyways, this is one of the points that I found interesting. So within a decade, other researchers injected another facet of thinking, the psychoanalysis. So now, cross-disciplinary research, which was impossible in the German academia system, was born. Not only born, but crystallized. Marxist theory took off in a whole new direction. Kind of like Marxist theory in America. It's not exactly, you know, the original Marxism. It's Marxism that fits America and America's laws and America's constitution. They're using the constitution in a Marxist fashion to destroy the constitution. So they had a bunch of psychologists, and they joined it up, and they called it Hegelian materialism. So the school grew until Adolf Hitler shut it down. It started in 22, and now they shut it down after the Nazi takeover of Germany. The communist philosophers somewhat disbanded and most regrouped in the United States. Concentrating in New York and attaching themselves to a new institute affiliated with Columbia University. After the war, as it happens, the organization resumed in Frankfurt. Within the next two decades, the main ideology of the Frankfurt School was three generations hence, and heavy research and testing had been done, as well as teaching the philosophy independent of any political party in the 60s. France began a parallel study and injected Freudian concepts. Well, now they have a new and improved set of ideas. They kind of spun it off from the original Marxist theory And now it's called critical theory. So the tactics that they used, one of the theories developed by George Lukacs, was the revolution and eros. And so this was the idea of using the difficult to suppress sexual instinct, but use it as a device for destruction in a society. After a while, this would make Western civilization absolutely stink. Well, that's true. So another tactic was the attack on religion. So this is back right after World War II. This, they went back to Germany and they resumed the Frankfurt School. And the attack on the religion that you see today, how many of those governors would allow thousands of people in the street to protest, but you couldn't have a church service? So they had to attack religion, and here's the reason they have to attack religion. Their research showed them, and this is what they taught, that, quote, as long as an individual had the belief, or even the hope of belief, that his divine gift of reason could solve the problems facing society, then that society would never reach the state of hopelessness and alienation that they considered necessary to provoke socialist revolution. That's a quote. That's a quote. That's very interesting. So very quickly, they begin to submit every negative and destructive criticism they could think of regarding the Judeo-Christian ideology. And it's been a constant barrage of this because it spread like a virus. Well, then there was a quiet cultural revolution that emerged. And strangely, the weak-minded, really, they never asked what the end game was. And many still don't know. I think it's a question worth asking. You know, in the song Revolution by the Beatles, I'm starting to think that that song might have been the reason he was assassinated. You listen to the words of that song? Hold on, I'm gonna look it up right now. It says, well, you say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. You tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out? Don't you know it's going to be? All right. Don't you know it's going to be? All right. So then the second verse. You say you got a real solution. Well, you know, we'd all love to see the plan. You ask me for a contribution. Well, you know, we're all doing what we can. But if you want money for people with minds that hate, all I can tell you is, brother, you'll have to wait.
And don't you know it's going to be? All right.
Etc. So John Lennon had, you know, had it going on here with this so far. You say you'll change the Constitution. Well, you know, we'd all love to change your head. You tell me it's the institution. Well, you know, you better free your mind instead. Here we go. But if you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't gonna make it with anyone anyhow. Who do they love? They love Chairman Mao, right? They don't want to show anybody the plan. They want to be destructive of not only property, but Western civilization. Well, John Lennon is saying, well, don't you know that you can count me out? If you talk about destruction, you say you got a real solution. We'd all love to see the plan. We'd love to see the end game. John Lennon was not one of the weak-minded. He was asking to see the plan. He was all for, you know, the, you know, whatever lefty situations there were, but he wanted to kind of see what the plan was. He asked me for a contribution. We're all doing what we can. But if you want money for people with minds that hate, well, that's pretty much everyone on the left. And he's saying, all I can tell you is, brother, you'll have to wait. I think I'm starting to think, and actually I've thought it for a little while. I have no proof one way or another. But, you know, when you look at the lyrics of this song and then he was assassinated by a lefty. Huh. That's all I got. So here we go. So the quiet cultural revolution emerged, but strangely, the weak-minded never asked what the end game was. Well, John Lennon asked, but many still don't know. It's always just over the horizon, or just around the corner, or on the verge of the implied utopia. I say implied because it's never actually stated anywhere that this is that this thinking will create utopia. Now, I was when I wrote this, it was the Obama administration. He's saying in his speeches, you often hear things like, you know, this will create or will provide or, you know, and it's like the end result outlives the person saying that making the claim. We'll never see the end result. We never will. Utopia is not for this earth. And all the things that you said Obamacare would do, or all the things you say, you know, all the jobs you say it will create, they never did. In fact, if you'll remember, all the shovel-ready jobs, that Obama claimed they'd create, he later kind of said, well, all those shovel-ready jobs are not quite as shovel-ready as we had hoped. Ha, 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 ha. The people, the group he's talking to, ha, 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 ha. They all laughed. All right. Tell us that the people holding a shovel. So when we take a look at some of the more specific tactics and the tenets, I've read this before. Pure evil is what seeps out. If one were to step back and look at today's society and list some of the biggest problems with the United States, independent of the following, the list could easily be identical. Here's number one. Back in 1938 or 40, number one, the creation of racism offenses. I'll let that sink in, because that's what's happening right now. This was what, I mean, they have a list of things to do to create, you know, to promote Marxism and create basically communism. The creation, the first of which is the creation of racism offenses. Is that sinking in? I need to get a drink. That should be number one with a bullet, because that's the one that they've discovered that works. I've mentioned before this guy I work with, and he defends, you know, here and there, what he claims are progressive values. I believe that that's an oxymoron. No such thing as progressive values when you're practicing critical theory and the first thing that they have to do is create racism offenses. Progressive values is definitely an oxymoron. Only because the guy really doesn't understand. He has a perception of progressive values that puts him above people who don't have progressive values, in his mind. I say people with progressive values are basically scumbags because of you're supporting people, regardless of what you believe, you're supporting people who will tear down not only this country, but Western civilization. You know, the people that do, you support people who believe in the 1619 Project. Number two is continual change to create confusion. How about that news cycle, folks? Constantly changing. So that people stay confused. Wear a mask. Don't wear a mask. Wear two masks. No. You got to wear three masks to really protect yourself. Not only yourself, but what you're doing is you're protecting others. If you died in a motorcycle crash and you happen to have COVID, that's a COVID death, and you get, you know, chalked up to that. I was watching a TikTok that had Tony Robbins on it, and he was complaining, actually. He was complaining about when he went and looked up the number of people who died from emphysema, the number of people who died from the flu, the number of people who died from other respiratory issues went down in the past year at the exact proportion that COVID deaths went up. Hello? That's why I think the whole COVID thing is just a whole global hoax by globalists, global government types that are trying to control people. And a lot of the weak-minded are not asking to see the plan. So they're supporting the sentiment of it. Well, you know, you need to put, I've got kids at the karate school, you know, 6 years old. And if I have my mask down or my little gator down around the neck, yes, sir. He said, hey, he put his hand up. Hey, you're going to need to put your mask. He's gesturing with his mask. You put your mask on. I'm like, I got it, buddy. I got it. I'll be fine. There's nobody within 6 feet of me. I'll be fine. Thank you, though. So, all right. So the continual change to create confusion. There's so much that you don't know what to believe, and people don't know what to believe. There's a current, like a river. The current is the narrative. And then there's little, you know, little eddies that fly off this way, and little, you know, little whirlpools over here of stuff. It's the current is the narrative. Myself, I'm kind of like walking along the bank, watching the river. I'm not in the narrative. I'm not in the current. I'm outside of it, which makes me a terrorist. I just found that out. So that's the continual change that creates confusion. That's a tactic. That's a plan. That's why there is so much information out there for anybody, for everybody, information going every direction and believable in every position. All right, speaking of positions. All right, sorry. Number three, the third tactic and tenet that they teach was the teaching of sex and homosexuality to children. There's nothing wrong with being gay. I'm even saying that now. It goes to my thesis that everything that they promote is to destroy or discredit or to get around natural law. Okay? I do believe that boys are boys and girls are girls. I do believe that. And I do believe that people can have girls, boys, slash boys, you know, whatever. They can have urges of homosexuality. It's just a matter of how much self-control they have. If they don't have any self-control, well, guess what? They're gay. people are susceptible to urges. They're susceptible to, you know, now the society is like bombarding everybody with homosexual type stuff. So that's another one. And now the undermining of schools and teachers' authority. That one's come full circle because the Department of Education and the unions, they're so much more powerful that the idea of students' rights or what's good for the students is just not even important anymore. But here's number five. Oh, my God. Number five, huge immigration to destroy national identity. Because anything that's white or male is terrible. Oh, okay. So we need to import people of color. We need to import Latinos, we need to import. No, they're importing people. They're importing people and promising them goodies that they will provide for their needs. That's why people are coming in. Matter of fact, during the Obama administration, the federal government was suing states that attempted to control their own illegal immigration problems. Donald Trump came in and said, okay, we need to get a handle on this. We got to build the wall. Because the Supreme Court said, well, no, that's not a concurrent jurisdiction, immigration or borders. It's the jurisdiction of the federal government. So while Donald Trump was in office, he was building a wall because the Supreme Court can't then turn around and say, well, no, it's up to the states, and then the states will decide whether they want to build a wall. You know, it was almost like two years apart, you know. During the Obama administration, when I think it was Arizona, they passed the legislation. The legislature in Arizona passed, if my memory serves, it was SB1070. And which said basically it was the same thing that was the federal law. And they got sued, and they took it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, no, you're not allowed to monitor or defend your own border. It's up to the federal government.
Huh.
So then when Donald Trump got in there, he said, okay, since it's up to the feds, I mean, that was like two or three years later. The Supreme Court can't then say, oh, well, we're going to make a law against Donald Trump. That's kind of what they're doing. Anyways, I got a question mark up here. I'm not sure how to run this thing here. Let's see if it looks like is this Sue from New Mexico?
Yeah. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hi. I'm so sorry. I don't know how long that little question mark was up there. I was asking for people to call in. I don't run, just so you know, I don't run the switchboard. G-Ski runs the switchboard. So I log in on my own account. So I don't have access to the switchboard to see how these things work. So this is my first, you know, my first go around with the switchboard and how that works. So I do sincerely apologize if that was question mark was there for a long time. Sorry.
No, it wasn't. Not for a long time. Just maybe 5 minutes or something. So.
Okay. All right. All
it's
right.
All okay.
I feel a little better. Because I was on a roll and I was going, and then I looked over and I saw, wait a minute, that wasn't there.
Well, no, it was a great role, so I was enjoying
it. All right, good.
You know, but I've kind of got a question, I don't know, maybe discussion on it. Where does Antifa fit into all of this? You know, in the beginning, I thought that they were using this, you know, like with the communism, you destabilize and everything else. You know, and that's partly what they use the Black Lives Matter for. But in my mind, do you think that Antifa has gone out of control? Now they're coming after the socialists as much as they are the other. And where is this going to lead?
Well, you're right. That is a fantastic question. And it is possible that, you know, when you create a monster, the monster can come around and get you. And that might be, you know, one of the things that is going on now. I really don't know. It came from Europe. I'm pretty sure the Antifa name and ideology. But the name Antifa, which means anti-fascist, that's what they call themselves.
Yeah.
They are the fascists. If you look at their behavior, if there just happened to be a mob of fascists and not a single guy that is directing them to do that. So that's the difference, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it just seems to me that when they did show up over here, because I think the Antifa has been around for quite a while, and like you said, more in Europe than here, that they, in the beginning, I think they were promoted by the blue states, the socialists, and things like that. You know, oh, good, here's something. And now it's getting totally out of control. So how much is this going to damage, you know, this Marxist plan that they've got because of the destruction? I mean, it's like it's helping them, but it isn't. And what are they going to do with them? Do you see them, you know, trying to get control of them? They're still ruling like Seattle and you know, different cities like that. I kind of follow it.
Right.
And they're still going crazy. And one of the things, the BLM and the Antifa, they're both anti-police, and which, you know, with the communism, they really need to push that, because in the end, communism, they put in their own police. So,
right.
You know,
I want to leave the possibility open for a whole new version of communism / Marxism. It has evolved to envelop the American system. So, like I think I touched on it earlier, they're kind of using the freedom that our Constitution allows us to destroy freedom. Right. And they're justifying. They're not right, you know, in doing so. But what they're doing is they're selling it, you know, so that like in the media and stuff, they sell it so that people will buy in to the reason behind what they're doing. That's kind of how I'm, you know, seeing it as it goes by. But past that, like I said, it's a whole new thing. Now, let me ask you this, Sue. Let's talk about Portland, Oregon, or Seattle, Washington, right? Those are strong, high Antifa strongholds, right?
Right.
If the global government people decided that this was counterproductive to what they're trying to do, in other words, the billionaires, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Do you think, and I don't know, do you think that they would be able to affect a control on these people?
Personally, no. I've been keeping track of them for, I don't know, since they really, really got started. Crazy. If you look at the people who are in this group, a lot of them are just drugged out of their minds, that they're truly, truly psychotic, most of them. And, you know, the only way that anyone will get control of them is to start arresting them, put them in jail, and then try them.
Right, a consequence. Because up till now, all of the people who have been arrested from left-wing protests have been, you know, released.
Right.
All the people from the, you know, the so-called insurrection at the Capitol on the 6th, they're trying to get them for 20 years. I mean, that's bullshit, you know? That's that's unbelievable.
Well,
they didn't,
you know,
burn
the whole
anything,
Capitol,
you know?
The whole Capitol thing is really strange, because they have it on, you know, footage. People had, of course, you know, everybody's got their cell phones and stuff.
Exactly.
That the Capitol Police let them in and waved them in, and then all of a sudden it turned into this. Personally, I think what happened on the 6th was pre-planned. I think Pelosi and a lot of them had pre-planned it, and, you know, they knew what they were going to do. And
right.
Again, there were some Antifa in that group also.
Oh, there definitely was. Those guys with the backpacks that had the ropes and the hammers.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, people, Trump supporters don't go to a rally or whatever with backpacks with ropes and hammers in it. And all the videos that I saw of people trying to break glass or trying to incite things, there were people who were taking the videos saying, this guy's not with us. This guy's not with us. He's an Antifa. He's an Antifa. And they were trying to, like, expose them and call them out. So I think there was probably out of the half, three-quarters of a million people that were there, I think, you know, obviously that meant that many, that level, that volume of people will attract people who can make it look like, you know, what it did look like. They come in to destroy, and they kind of like go undercover as people who are supporters or whatever. And then they try with the megaphone, and they start doing that. They learn those things, too, and you know this, at the Midwest Academy here in, I think it was Michigan.
Right. Well, you know, but the thing, and my point is this, I think it was planned, and I think in this instance, the left used Antifa. You know, they used them and, you know, put them in this rally to do what they wanted them to do. I think it was planned, pre-planned. And
I totally
so
agree.
In a way, they're using them when convenient to them, but at the same time, they're starting to get really out of hand. You know, and so they're kind of in a no-win situation with this group, if you ask me. It's going to be interesting to see where it goes. If they start having consequences for them, then that's going to go against what they're wanting right now to destabilize, which is defund the police, you know, and all of this, no prosecution, you know, havoc everywhere.
I think they can get this.
They're going to have to do something.
Right, but I think they can get this under control by simply creating a consequence, a real consequence for two or three of them. Because right now they're operating with impunity and they're getting released.
Do you think they'll do that, though? Because that goes against what, you know, they're saying and they're trying to do right now.
They will do it when it becomes necessary to get them under control.
To them.
I think it will only take, you know, two or three people that really get harsh sentences. You know, even if they feel betrayed, they'll be like, whatever. I don't, you know, you can feel betrayed if you want, whatever. You know, it's choose your next move wisely, you know, talking to Antifa. Okay. You know, feel betrayed. They don't, cause they don't care. They're just using these people.
Yeah.
They have no care for their well-being or whatever. So
they just like violence and destruction and, you know, that's what they're about, and they're almost leaderless too, you know, it's a strange organization anyway.
Right. At least yes. Black Lives Matter has leaders, you know, they have founders who have admitted being Marxists, even
and
though they're buying, million-dollar houses.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say.
Yeah.
They and in all white neighborhoods too.
Right. Oh yeah.
So anyway, well, thanks for the discussion because
thanks for calling.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying your show.
Well, thanks. I'm I'm trying to, you know, floundering, you know, trying to see, well, what shall I talk about next, you know? Because I didn't find out until you did you get G-Ski's link?
I got it 23 yeah. minutes before the show. I was able
exactly.
to put it out twice on Twitter. Twitter is shadow banning me, and the
oh, really?
G-Ski show, and especially Vito's show. I
wow.
have to send each one of them out. I'm trying to confuse the algorithms. It's getting really hard to put out a show.
Well, the reason you got the show link 23 minutes before the show was because 26 minutes before the show, I called him, I texted him and said, "Hey, did you send me that VIP invitation that allows me to direct in?" He's like, and then my phone's ringing. It's him. He's like, shit, I forgot to do it. He hadn't even set up the show. I was like, yeah, so I didn't
oh, wow.
do it. So
well,
between
I,
me calling
yeah.
him and you getting the link, he set up the whole show. So I appreciate him doing that. And
yeah, he did it pretty fast.
Yeah, he did it super fast. He that's because he's the man, you know. But
yeah.
he got a gig and he forgot about doing the thing. So, all right,
but,
you know
the
good news is it
gig.
Only it only takes one of us to complete the podcast here. So,
yeah, okay. Well, anyway, thank you, and not much time left, but anyway, I'll just finish listening.
All right.
And,
well,
okay.
It.
All right. Bye.
All right. See ya. All right.
Okay.
So I'll talk to you later there, Susie. Thank you for calling. Thanks for putting the link out. I appreciate that. We have yet to talk to Suzette. Let's see if Suzette wants to call in. We'll see. So until she does, I was going through the critical theory. And like I said, Mark Levin is starting to talk about this as it relates to American Marxism with his new book. So check out that. It's on Amazon. I'm not selling anything, but I was going through the origins of critical theory. I'm probably going to do this a few more times. This is one of those things where, you know, you have different listeners here and there. You never know who's going to be listening, and they're not going to go back and hear. Oh, you better go back and hear our show on critical theory. They're not going to do it. So I'm going to hit it here and there. Hopefully, you know, start exposing the origins and the reasons behind this thing. So critical theory, the tenets when they teach critical theory, the number one, the creation of racism offenses. The creation. Number two, the continual change to create confusion. This is talking about in a society. Number three, the teaching of sex and homosexuality to children. Younger and younger now, by the way. But number four, undermining the schools and teachers' authority. They've already surrendered. The school unions and the teachers' authority, they're already surrendered to all of this. They now are teaching critical race theory in schools at all levels. So now brings me to number five, huge immigration to destroy our national identity. And back in the day, there was the promotion of excessive drinking. Now it's like, you know, let's legalize drugs and stuff like that. Number seven, the emptying of churches. Nice. Here we go. Here's a great one that just started really being tangible. an unreliable legal system with bias against victims of crime. So in other words, we need to understand why that guy killed that guy. We need to understand why. Never mind that guy who's dead. Never mind him. That's not the problem. The problem is, why did this guy kill him? Number nine, dependency on the state or on state benefits. Didn't we just spend $6 trillion? And by the way, let me remind you that if you spent $1 a second, do you know how long it would take to spend $1 trillion? No, you don't. I'll tell you. It takes 31,700 odd years to spend $1 trillion at $1 per second. So when we have $6 trillion, take 31,700 years, multiply that by six. That's to give you an idea of how big a trillion is. All right. The lady just said I got 90 seconds left, so I'm looking at the I'm looking at the promo list and trying to find something that's what do we got? 45 seconds in. Here we go. Well, we'll do wives.
When we do internet talk radio, we receive support from a great many areas. We have listener support, of course, and some who help with the promoting. One group that often goes unrecognized are the wives of Internet Talk Radio hosts. They are the ones who tolerate our dalliances and the time we invest in our hobbies. Well, this is one way we can properly recognize those who are closest to us by broadcasting their sincere sentiments regarding our passions.
Are you going to stay up all night? You have family, you know. You're always at that computer. How much money do you make doing that dumbass radio show? You're not the only one that lives there, you know. You better come and eat. I'm not bringing it in there.
Thank you. Thanks for coming along.
You're listening to Renaissance Radio.
Dialing it in.
On Airwaves America. With Dave and GC Rock.
Good night, folks. Thanks very much again for checking it out. Check the podcast out later on, and hopefully it was an okay show. We'll find out. I'll find out tomorrow what I said when I listen to it. Later, guys.